This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Joanne Lee Molinaro has been sharing her recipes and family stories since 2016, but the Illinois native and graduate of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign never expected her food and her words to mean so much to so many people. With more than 2 million followers on TikTok, part of her 3.5 million fans spread across social media, the food blogger, YouTuber, and author shares stories and recipes at the intersection of identity, food, and family. The daughter of immigrants from what's now known as North Korea, Molinaro is on a journey of self-acceptance and cultural appreciation. Her content is a celebration of the empowerment that comes with being vulnerable. It's a place viewers can watch a traditional Korean dish become veganized and maybe laugh or even cry at the stories she shares.
I used to make fun of my dad's accent a lot. I knew he was smart, but I couldn't help assuming that his accent meant he wasn't as smart as I was. In high school, I wrote a poem that I was really proud of, and I showed it to him, and with a huge smile, he said, "Wow, like Wadsworth." I laughed and I said, "Who's Wadsworth?" A few years later, in college, where I majored in English, I read all about Wordsworth, and as a result, learned just how generous my father was when he read my crappy little poem. I would soon discover that my dad had an affinity for languages, majored in English at Yonsei University, learned Vietnamese, and served as a Vietnamese, English, and Korean translator during the Vietnam War. A couple years ago, we went to Yonsei for his college reunion, and my dad couldn't contain his pride. We walked all around campus, and he showed me where he spent all of his time, the English building. And I thought of the English building at my college, and for the first time in my life, I felt so grateful and unworthy to call this man my dad.
Joanne Molinaro's debut cookbook and memoir is The Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Oma's Kitchen. I originally spoke with her last month. You can always let us know what you thought on Twitter at 21st Show or by sending an email to talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with Joanne Molinaro, also known as The Korean Vegan. Joanne Molinaro, welcome to The 21st. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I want to begin. You've been called a vegan icon, social justice champion in the Washington Post. The LA Times had a headline about you overachieving. but you weren't always vegan, and your Korean heritage and food wasn't something you always felt like you could share as openly with people. So I want to begin by asking, you know, if you run into someone, right, so you haven't seen them in a long time, how do you define yourself to people, you know, because there are multitudes, we'll get into that, but how do you define yourself?
That's such a great question. And it's one that I've been grappling with because I recently stepped down from partnership at my firm. And so for, you know, 17 years of my career, I was a lawyer who did a little bit of food blogging on the side. And these days, I'm like, well, I'm not really that anymore, obviously. And I don't necessarily consider myself even just a food blogger. And so these days, I've been telling myself, or telling my friends, at least, who I've been catching up with, well, now I'm a writer who lawyers on the side. And it's really been sort of surreal, but incredibly exciting to be able to describe myself that way.
So you made longer YouTube videos, but then you sort of migrated to TikTok. And I wonder what drew you to TikTok as a medium?
Well, what drew me to TikTok was really the content on TikTok. I was a consumer first of that content before I ever decided to, you know, dip my toe in the water there. I really just wanted to see what was happening. There was a great deal of kind of electrifying young activism that was taking place on TikTok that really intrigued me. And also, you know, I, like many other people, we were in a pandemic. I hadn't seen my family in months. I hadn't had a dinner party in months. And I really just was longing for some type of connection or even something to take me away from what was stressing me out about my job and in the news. And TikTok offered that. But shortly after joining, I was so inspired by the food content on TikTok and figured, well, I have a food blog. And like you said, I had some experience with long form videos. And it was just a matter of shrinking that to 60 seconds. And that's ultimately how The Korean Vegan, as it is seen today, came to be.
When you, if you had to describe TikTok for people, and I should say I had to set a limit on TikTok on my phone, like one of those child limits, because I would find myself falling into 45 to 90 minute TikTok holes. but obviously it's difficult to summarize a social network, right? There's food TikTok, there's racial justice TikTok, humor TikTok. But how do you describe it? Like, what's unique about it as compared to YouTube in terms of the way people approach it as a creative medium?
Well, I think what's unique about it is what is unique about you. That is what makes TikTok so brilliant. It is very tailored to what you want to see. And that's why it's so easy to fall into those 45 minute to 90 minute holes, because within just a few minutes, TikTok is able to figure out, well, this is what Brian likes to see. This is the kind of food he might like to eat, or this is the kind of activism that excites him and inspires him. And that certainly was the case for me as well. And it's done in a way that's very short, so it doesn't require a lot of commitment. At least you don't think it does, right? Oh, I just need 60 seconds of time to just watch one TikTok video. But like you said, before you know it, you're sort of sucked into this vortex of innovation, comedy, in some cases, tearjerkers, food, and always tailored to what you already want to see.
So you... You began at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and I guess I shouldn't say you began, you finished, you studied English. What was your, what path did you think you were on at that time?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I was on the path to doing the thing that soothed my anxiety the best. Like literally, that's all I cared about. I, you know, started college, I ended it in 3 years. Because I was anxious to start the next chapter of my life. But then when I graduated, I realized I had no idea what that chapter was supposed to be. I just knew that I was now supposed to be an adult. I had to pay for my own car insurance. I had to, you know, do things like get rent and, you know, all of those adulty things that I quite frankly wasn't ready for. And so I thought, okay, well, I graduated with an English degree. And the only reason I did that was because I like to write and I like to read, but that's not going to pay the bills. So I guess I need to figure out my next step. And ultimately, I decided to work at a law firm as a paralegal for a year. And it was during that time I decided, all right, well, maybe I should be a lawyer. And that's how I ended up with a 17-year practice in commercial litigation.
Did you like being a lawyer? Do you like being a lawyer?
I like being good at my job. And I like my clients immensely. And I like knowing that they are getting the best service that they possibly can. Being a lawyer is very demanding. It can be incredibly stressful and unpredictable. But the relationships that I've built with my clients and knowing that they view me as their counselor, I take immense pride in that.
So at what point do you say, you know, you're doing this food blogging on the side, at what point do you start to think, wow, maybe this is something, you know, that's a big leap to quit a law firm job, right? They sometimes refer to these as what is it? Golden handcuffs, right? You're making good money. You're on your partner. How do you make that leap?
I think that decision is very different for everyone, but I'll share kind of how I arrived at that on my own. You know, I've been doing this food blogging thing for a long time, 4.5 years when I had started my TikTok. And during that time, I was not only sharing recipes, but I was doing a fair amount of writing as well. I like to share the stories underneath the food. And people say these days all the time, love my food, love my people. And that was really the idea of the Korean Vegan all the way back from 2017, which is when I started sharing the stories about my mom and my dad along with the recipes. And it was really that sort of unique piece to this food blog that I think caught the attention of people who said, you know what, Joanne, you're doing something really special here. Do you really think that you could have the same sort of impact as a lawyer at a large law firm? But as you say, those golden handcuffs, they're very difficult to pry open. And in my case, I had a lot of time to really think about it. When my TikTok blew up last year, that was probably the first time I really seriously considered the depth of impact I could have as the Korean Vegan versus the impact I was having as a partner at a large law firm. And ultimately decided, you know, practically speaking, I needed to make sure that I would have enough income to pay for my rent and pay for the food, right? But, you know, once those sort of considerations were taken into account, I ultimately decided, hey, what, you know what, I'm 42 years old, life is short, I want to try this. And if it doesn't work out, I know I will land on my feet anyway.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're revisiting my conversation with Joanne Molinaro, better known by her 3.5 million fans online as The Korean Vegan. Her debut cookbook and memoir, The Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Oma's Kitchen, is available now in stores and online. This conversation was originally broadcast last month. So your book has everything from seaweed sesame bagels to Korean lasagna, Oma's casserole, which is a potato mushroom casserole bake you describe as your family's attempt to seem more American. Can you talk about your connection, you know, connection that food has to you, to your family, and to your heritage?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, sort of the misconception is that, you know, Korean food is sort of this like unchanging, you know, static cuisine. But first of all, I'm Korean American. I was born in Chicago, Illinois, and I've lived there my entire life. So there's a fair bit of Chicago in my diet. I grew up eating, you know, some meat and potatoes, hot dogs is a big thing, you know, growing up in my childhood.
What's your favorite hot dog condiment?
I love ketchup. I know that's anathema. I know that makes, like, it basically disqualifies me as a Chicagoan, but I really do like ketchup. I'm a big fan of mustard and onions as well. I love the raw onions, but, you know, that's what I grew up eating. And therefore, some of these recipes are really that. It's sort of a melding of two cultures in this really unique, funny, quirky, but delicious way. Like that casserole dish, like you said, it was sort of my mother's attempt to be, quote, American, because, you know, the kids were always like, you know, why don't we get to eat spaghetti? Why can't we eat McDonald's and meatloaf like the kids at school? Why do we have to have kimchi jjigae and, you know, rice all the time? So she came up with this casserole dish, which was really just, you know, cream of mushroom soup from the can, you know, some meat and potatoes and a little bit of breadcrumbs and green beans. And so my reinvention of that to make it vegan was sort of my homage to my mother and really an homage to how much she loved us and how much she wanted us to feel accepted in the United States, even though we were a little different. And I love that about her.
Yeah, well, you have this tagline on your you know, I've seen a number of spots. You veganize Korean food and Koreanize everything else. Can you talk about that process in terms of that dish and other things and how that's affected the way you approach food?
Yeah, so for me, food is so much about nostalgia and food is so much about trying to create safety and joy, right? And for me, safety and joy brings me right back to, you know, when I was 5 years old and my grandmother was calling me into the kitchen for dinner time. You know, we're, you know, swinging swings in the backyard, riding our bikes around, you know, Karlov Avenue. I grew up in Skokie, Illinois. I mean, these are the things that really fill me with so much happiness. And you can recreate that with flavors. So when I say that I Koreanize everything else, it's like me sort of injecting a little bit of soy sauce into my spaghetti sauce, adding a dab of gochujang to my lasagna, not to overpower the existing flavors, but just to give me that little hint of home from Skokie. You know, when I think about my grandma and my mom and all the foods that they used to make for me, that's really what I mean. And, you know, for me, it's Koreanized. For somebody else, it could be, you know, Russianized. For someone else, it could be, you know, Japanized. You know, there's so many different ways to take this to personalize your food. And I think that's just such a beautiful thing.
We asked listeners in our texting group to send us a dish that makes them feel connected to their heritage. Franny wrote in to say, being Polish, I'm partial to sausage and pierogies. It's hard not to be happy when you're eating a pierogi. And she also
says, I agree.
Yeah, well, right. Who doesn't? But she says, you know, she also enjoys cooking programs, but, you know, what we eat has certainly evolved. Out of everything you make and share in the book, what is that special dish for you?
Oh, there are so many, Brian. I mean, it would be hard to pick one, but if I had to, you know, right now with the holidays coming up, it's probably my pecan pot pie. It is one of my most popular recipes. It's something that's sought after at every holiday party. And, you know, the reason I love that dish is because it, again, it really speaks to this idea of, you know, don't worry about making authentically, you know, Korean dishes or authentically Polish dishes. What you should make is authentically you dishes. What represents you and what you like to eat, what your story is. And for me, you know, pecan pie is not a traditional Korean dessert, I'll tell you right now, spoiler alert. However, what I wanted to do was speak to that American side of me. Pecan pie is a very American dish, particularly in Thanksgiving meal. But then I added a little bit of red bean paste to it, which is a flavor that's very, very understood by Korean palates, particularly in desserts. And I did that to speak to my Korean side. And now it's a family favorite, and I'm so excited to be able to share it in my cookbook.
Okay, we need to take a break here. So let me just remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Joanne Lee Molinaro, who's known to her millions and millions of fans across social media, especially on TikTok, as the Korean Vegan. And that's also the name of her new memoir cookbook. It's called The Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Oma's Kitchen. She's also a University of Illinois grad, and until very recently was a partner at a high-powered Chicago law firm. We're going to continue our conversation with Joanne Molinaro, the Korean Vegan, coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Please stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're revisiting my conversation from about a month ago with Joanne Lee Molinaro. She's known online as the Korean Vegan. She is massively TikTok famous, more than 2 million followers there, 3.5 million fans across all her social media accounts. And she is a food blogger, a YouTuber, and an author who shares stories and recipes at the intersection of identity, food, and family. She's the daughter of immigrants from what's now known as North Korea, and her debut cookbook and memoir is called The Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Oma's Kitchen. I originally spoke with her last month. Because of that, we're not taking calls for this segment, but you can always let us know what you thought on Twitter. We are at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. Okay, here now is the conclusion of my conversation with the Korean Vegan, Joanne Molinaro. In some of your videos, you talk about the sort of othering you've experienced around Korean food and Korean identity. Can you talk about cultural appreciation in the food community, why it's important?
I think that food is one of the most powerful vehicles for sharing cultural experiences and stories. And therefore, if you become excessively guarded over that food, then what happens is an unnecessary cutting off of storytelling. That's really what happens there. And I think that, you know, cultural appreciation really is about that notion again of you love my food, then maybe you should love my people, or at least look into what they are and who they are, right? And so when you are appreciating the food, it might actually make the food even more delicious and enhance your experience with that food if you take a little bit of time to understand the stories that underpin that food. And that's really been the experience for me, you know, learning to love Ethiopian cuisine without understanding where that food comes from and its rich history with that country. I'm really cutting myself short. Like, I'm not doing myself any service by doing that. And it's the same thing with Italian cuisine. You know, my husband is Italian American, and learning about all the different regions of Italy and the wonderful food that each uniquely creates and contributes to that country's, you know, cuisine has been amazing. So I think that cultural appreciation and food is a really great way to learn more about other cultures.
Let's go now to the phone. Gao is on the line from Urbana. Gao, thank you for calling in.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, yes. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, my name isn't Gao. It's Joe.
Zhao, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, no, not a big deal. I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria, and I love to cook my Nigerian meals. My sons are teenagers today. I mean, jollof rice is one of their favorites, and efo, which is a spinach-based with melon seeds. And I think about what you're talking about, cultural appreciation of food. I mean, it's a very powerful medium to get people to understand different things about culture. Whatever church I've been a part of, I usually use my food as a fundraiser for the church. Either doing any kind of fundraising activities in several schools, and locally also, I've used food as a way to bridge that gap, but also to at least introduce foods of Nigeria. Lagos is a very cosmopolitan place, and so the food in Lagos is very different from the food in Benin City, which is where my parents grew up. But it goes through its own iterations and changes along the way. But I love to cook, and I love hearing what Joanne speaks about food and Korean food in particular. I mean, I love Korean food. I love food in general, so that's one of the things. So I'm always willing to open and try different foods.
What is your favorite dish from Nigeria?
It's the jollof rice with fried plantains, which we call dodo. Even Zuckerberg, when he was in Nigeria, Lagos, talked about a jollof rice, and jollof rice and fried plantains are pretty much one of the things that it's a big staple. It's a big occasional meal that you eat, but now you can cook it any day. But growing up in the 60s and 70s in Nigeria, it was a special occasion meal, which was just it's kind of a Sunday meal or a birthday meal.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm a fellow food lover. And I have to say, Nigerian food is very popular on TikTok.
All right. So I want to share another message we got from a listener. This is from Anne, who said, I went vegan 10 years ago. It was the best thing I've ever done. I can't imagine ever killing an animal because of tradition. There are so many ways to keep tradition alive without the environmental damage, cruelty, and social inequalities that come from animal agriculture. And besides, the happy memories really come from the time spent with people. We got a voicemail on this subject as well. Let's take a listen to that.
Hi, this is Eunice Alpasan, and I'm coming up on 6 years since going vegan. I remember in the beginning feeling so ostracized and judged by my Filipino family. Given how much I assimilated since immigrating to the US, eating the food my mom made felt like one of the few ways I could still experience my culture. And as much as I believed in my own decision to go vegan, it did hurt me to think that doing so also meant I had to let go of the little Filipino heritage I thought I had left. But through veganizing Filipino foods like kere-kere, lumpia, sinigang, and even Filipino-style pimiento cheese, it has helped me learn and experience my culture in entirely new ways that also feel very intentional.
So, Joanne, I wonder if you can respond to that and maybe talk about the role of meat in your cultural heritage and how you balance, you know, honoring that while also being vegan.
Yeah, I mean, well, I love that last message because it so perfectly describes my own anxiety about going vegan. A lot of the pushback that I receive from the Korean and Korean American community about my, quote, authenticity if I eschewed meat. And then really the irony of it all, which is that I became so much closer and intentional when it came to my connection to my roots and my heritage as a result of giving up meat. And I think that, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you that meat isn't a central part of the Korean diet. I mean, everyone is familiar with the Korean barbecue and, you know, certainly, you know, given Korea's history with poverty and war, meat represents to many Korean people survival, wealth, health. That's certainly the case for even my parents. They still believe that, notwithstanding, you know, I'm sitting here running 5 marathons without eating meat. And they're like, well, I'm not sure you're doing it the healthy way. So, you know, there is that. But I think what it also dismisses is the rich tradition in plant-based cuisine. You know, for example, there is a very thriving Buddhist community in South Korea, and Buddhist nuns, for the most part, live a plant-based life. They don't eat animal products, and they've been doing this for over 1,000 years. And so it's very easy to forget that we have a rich history of eating a very plant-centric diet for most of our history, simply because in the past 50 years, we've become a little bit more westernized and adopted more meat. And I think also, you know, to speak to this point, you can veganize just about anything. You know, I have a, you know, short ribs recipe in my Korean vegan cookbook that is absolutely delicious. I have a flank steak, you know, grilled flank steak recipe in my cookbook that, you know, I make, you know, sandwiches out of that totally, you know, fools everyone into thinking that it's meat. There's so much technology nowadays that makes it very easy to satisfy just about every craving.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. We're speaking with Joanne Lee Molinaro, who's the author of the Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Oma's Kitchen. We've been talking a lot about food, but your videos also go into so much more, and everything from immigrant life to broken relationships, your first encounter with racism and childhood trauma. Is it difficult to be vulnerable like that in such a public forum?
Yeah, it can be. I think probably it's a little bit easier for me than some people. There's some people who are very intensely private, and sharing that can be very difficult. I'm not, you know, at that end of the spectrum. But that said, you know, there are a lot of times where after I hit that post button, I'm overcome with immense anxiety about, oh my God, who's going to see this? What are they going to say? What if they don't understand what I'm trying to say? What if, you know, I offend somebody, or, you know, what if somebody hurts me? Because that's really the trick there, is you're really being vulnerable, and I'm kind of laying myself out there, and it can be very easy for somebody to hurt me when I'm in that state. So sure, it can be hard, but overwhelmingly, the feedback is so positive. And, you know, as the earlier guest was talking about, there's this incredible dialogue that happens between two different cultures through food. We learn more about each other, about each other's families, histories. And that part is so stunning, emotionally and spiritually, that it often overwhelms any of the detractors that might try to make this experience anything other than positive.
And you've also started a sort of an advice theme on some of the TikToks. There's one of your more popular ones is a 60-second video of giving some advice as you unwrap a steaming hot sweet potato. This is about getting hurt by someone, coping with that pain. You reject and riff on that saying, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Let's take a listen.
I'm not saying you have to forgive the ones who hurt you. No, they don't deserve your forgiveness. But you know who does? The person who once loved them. The person who let them pass the guardrails in the first place. You. Because here's the thing. You have a choice. You can let those betrayals cling to you, weigh you down, or you can peel them off. Because you are not their failures. You are not your heartbreak. And you are not defined by your pain. Even though your pain makes you weak, it's your choices that make you strong.
How do people respond to these sorts of messages? And maybe you can just talk about your decision to sort of bring together food and this, you know, more heartfelt, you know, speaking directly to people who are watching you.
Well, the TikTok community, and even larger, you know, beyond TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, social media in general, particularly during the pandemic, we were isolated. We were alone. And I think that there was sort of this need that we couldn't really articulate to feel like we weren't alone, but also feel like there was something out there that provided guidance in our pain. And I started these videos really on a lark because, you know, my nephew was 3 and he was being a lot more talkative. And I was just so excited about the day when I could sit down and chat with him and have these sort of tough conversations with him about heartbreak, you know, finding a job or being an adult and all of those things. And what I kind of gathered from my time on TikTok was that there are a lot of young people out there who are struggling with pain, who are struggling with trauma. And what I didn't want to do was provide the same old, you know, aphorisms that, you know, really are dismissive of their struggle and really doesn't validate their pain, but sort of is the easy answer. Oh, well, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. And I just hated that growing up when I was going through a tough time. I hated hearing that. I really just wanted someone to say, no, you know what? It can really hurt you and it could leave a mark. It could scar you. But you know, so the kernel in all of that is that the answer to so many of these questions aren't going to be in a self-help book or, you know, how you eat or working out. It's really about you. It's about your choices. It's about recognizing that your pain doesn't define you. It's a feeling. What defines you is what you do in reaction to that pain. And that is where empowerment really begins.
I think that's a great note on which to end our conversation. Joanne Lee Molinaro is the author of The Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Alma's Kitchen. And you can also find her on TikTok and YouTube. We'll have links to all those sites on our website. Joanne Molinaro, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And that is it for our show today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to be revisiting two other recent conversations. One is on the bald eagle, America's most iconic bird. It was declared an endangered species back in the 1960s. At one point, there were only 3 bald eagle nests in Illinois. But the population has rebounded in the last couple of decades. Now there are nests in every one of Illinois' 102 counties. But there are still environmental threats, so we'll be talking about the past and future of Illinois' bald eagles. Then we're going to have a conversation with an Illinois musician who's working to bridge divides in the audiences for classical music by pairing Black composers with the works of Bach. Rochelle Sennett is a professor of piano at U of I. Her new project is called Bach to Black. That's all coming up tomorrow on the 21st, which is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.